So the question I asked you guys was, the one I'm going to focus on, which one would you keep? And I'm going to go with Joe and say I would keep history, which sounds really weird because I think in all the classes you guys talked about, I think just about any class can be a good class if you teach it right, if you use the material to actually be practical and love people and stuff like that. Like, speaking of math, here's another one of my nods to math. I watched, and this will again show you what kind of person I am, I watched a documentary on the math of Japanese castles. You know, Japan is very earthquake prone, and, you know, they built these castles in the 1600s. Excuse me, the 1600s, right? These medieval castles, you know, you've seen them with the curve and the roofs are like this. Well, that's not just decorative. Like, that curve is actually like the most stable thing you can get without mortar to keep something up during an earthquake. And like, they did the math on the equations of these. So my point is to say, like, if somebody taught math and used samurai castles, you know, to like explain the math, I think it'd be cool. And so when we do history, we got to like connect it. Let's go back to Hallie's comment. We got to connect it to real life, if you will. Like, and this is the way you teach any concept, by the way. Like, and this is my opinion. I got it from this guy named Dr. Kevin Washburn. If you happen to listen to the podcast, great, great dude. But when you teach a skill, like, you just do the skill, right? Like, that's how you learn it. You do the skill. When you teach a concept like history or science or math, you gotta, although math is skill too. Anyway, when you teach a concept, in order for that concept to stick, you gotta marry it to something else. Even at the most simple level, the way that we often remember people, and I don't remember names very well at all, but you gotta connect it to something. You gotta connect that concept to something. Like, here's another illustration. Katie, give me a random number between 1 and 10, please. 4. Okay. 4 is the fourth commandment is honor your father and mother. And the reason I know that, if you guys were here however many weeks ago, you remember when I did the whole 10 commandments and the connections for each 10 commandment? You know, like, number 2 is have no idols, because the number 2 looks like a guy bowing down in front of an idol. So I can remember number 2 is always have no idols. So anyway, number 4, I don't really know that's the calendar one. I had to actually think of it. Four is honor the Sabbath. Did I say father and mother? 5 is mother, I'm sorry, because the number 5 looks a little like a pregnant woman from the side. So 5 is honor your father and mother. It works, right? I'm trying to illustrate, if you're going to get a concept, you have to, even at the most base level and at the high level, you got to connect it to something in order to make it like stick. Now, the reason I tell you all of that is because Psalm 105, actually, did anybody, and I'm not like trying to pick on you, did anybody actually read it ahead of time? Okay. It's all good. Psalm 105 is by and large a recounting of Israel's history. And when I was reading it, I'm thinking, we already have the book of Exodus. Why do we have a psalm retelling the story of the Exodus? And actually, if you read the Psalms, there are lots of retelling of Exodus. So why do people make up songs about this? And why does the Lord see fit to put these other, I don't know, approaches to the history of the Exodus in the Psalter for us to have? And my answer is because, at least my tentative answer, is because if you teach history right, you have to connect it to something else to make it relevant. You have to make sense of it. The raw facts are just the raw facts. You got to put them together into some kind of story that connects with people. Like, let me give you one more non-biblical example, then I'll give you a Bible example, and then we'll finally get into the text. So one of the teachers at my school, Beth Clark, one of the ways she teaches history is whenever prom comes, all the students have to make a promposal, but it has to be like some figure from history making the promposal. So like, if Henry VIII were to make a promposal, what would his promposal look like? You know what I mean? If Lady Jane Seymour made a promposal, what would her promposal look like? But it works, right? Because it makes the kid learn about the person, but they connect it to something that's in their life right here and now. So it sticks. It matters. So if this helps, concept, connection. So I say all that to say, when we look at the history, or when the psalmist looks at the history of Israel, the history of the Exodus, what connection do they make to their present day lives to make it have meaning, if you will? And here's my answer. Here's the objectives. I'm going to give you the long, fancy one, and then I'll give you what hopefully will be the shorter and simpler one. The psalmist goes back over history to induce us to praise our covenant God in his orchestration of the difficulties and delights of history. So when you look at history, and I've already been on my soapbox, so I'll try to back off of this, but you know, look at the way history is taught in schools today. Like some history classes you take and you'll come out of it feeling awful proud to be an American. You know, had problems, but what a great country this is. And then there's other history classes you take and you'll walk out of it and you'll feel like America's the worst thing that ever happened on the face of the earth and what horrible people these old white angry men were. Like, it just depends on what connection the teacher makes between the concepts and the raw facts of history, if you will. So the psalmist is saying, when we look at our history, we are induced to praise our covenant God in his orchestration of the difficulties and delights thereof. Here's my simplified objective, and in case I don't get there, if you look at the end of Psalm 105, verse 41, I'm going to steal this image out and kind of make it the spotlight, if you will. He opened the rock and water flowed out. It ran in the dry places like a river. So here's the simplified idea, if you will. Life is going to be full of dry places. And in fact, God ordains that we go through dry places. But God also ordains that there will be rivers in those dry places. Not just streams, not just trickles, rivers. The Lord will provide rivers in the midst of the dry places he takes us to. Hallie and I's wedding dance was to Jars of Clay, and the Valley Song, that's what it's called. I will sing of your mercy that leads me through valleys of sorrow to rivers of joy. And that's pretty much what I think the psalmist is getting at. His mercy will lead us through valleys of sorrow to rivers of joy. John 16:33. By the way, more concept connection here. The 6:33s. Matthew 6:33. Seek first the kingdom and his righteousness and all these things will be added unto you. John 16:33. In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. That's the one sentence or one verse summary of what I'm going to try to get across in Psalm 105. There will be trouble, just like there was trouble in the history of the Israelites. But the Lord will be with us, just like he was with the Israelites. So there's the lesson. Now let's actually get to the text so that you can see if that lesson's actually in the text. So having said that, I broke it down into these sections. So I got one more thing to say, but I'll tell you what, let's go through the intro and then I'll say that one more thing because it'd be nice to actually read the Bible before we get dismissed from Sunday school class, right? Unless we want to talk more about our need for math, and when we go do our prayer walk in the schools, we'll bring petitions for more applied math. How's that? Okay, so if somebody would open us up by reading verses 1-3, please.
Give praise to the Lord, proclaim his Make known among the nations what he has done. Sing to him, sing praise to him, tell of all his wonderful acts. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord.
Beautiful. Thank you. So, a quick comment. This is the opening, and once again, and you heard it even with Pastor White's, it's Chris White, right? That's his name? Okay, I think so. I'm going to feel terrible if I get it wrong, but you heard Pastor Chris beat this drum again, and I hope you're getting not sick of it, but I hope it's starting to really sink in that the predominant emotion, maybe not the predominant, one of the two predominant emotions in the Psalms is joy. Like that's how God sets up for him to be praised. He is not worshipped by obedient servants. He's not worshipped by trembling slaves. He's not worshipped by automatons. He's worshipped by rejoicing, full-lifed, happy people. And that's essentially what he's calling for, or the psalmist is calling for here. Now, the other thing that I awkwardly paused off of, so two kind of big themes I want you to think of as we go through the rest of the psalm. The first one I've already established with the whole history, concept, connection thing. Like, what brings all these facts together? What connection do I make? The other one is something that I've said several times, but I just want to keep putting in front of you, and that is, remember that poetry, all poetry, but in particular the Psalms, is not meant to be studied. It is meant to be savored. It's not meant to be educational. It's meant to be enjoyed. Now, there is education there. There is study to be done in the Psalms, but that's not the main thing. It's almost like I'm showing you this beautiful tapestry, and I take out, I don't know, different yarns in the tapestry and show you the color and the thread count and stuff like that. But the goal is not for you to see the thread count and see the yarn. The goal is for you to see the tapestry and appreciate the tapestry. The goal is not for you to pick out the violin in the orchestra, although that might help you appreciate the song. The goal is for you to appreciate the song. So I say all that because as we continue to go through the psalm, remember, even though I'm going to try to pick out parts, and it is good to pick out parts, you only pick those parts out so that then you can appreciate them more when you put them back in the psalm and appreciate the psalm as a whole. Like with poetry, whoever's writing it is after your emotions, not after your mind. And so I offer that, just keep that in mind. You know, if you were here last week, I think it was last week, too many events ago, think about your favorite reader, you know, Michael Sager riding in a car with a stranger, reading the Bible. By the way, if you're like totally lost, listen to last week's lesson, it'll make sense. But imagine, you know, imagine your favorite, whatever, I don't know, it was, for some reason Samuel L. Jackson pops into my head, but imagine him reading the Bible and just feeling it flow over you, if you will. Okay, so history, connections and concepts, and poetry, a sweater to be savored, not a yarn to be unraveled. I don't know, see if that analogy works for you. So having said that, anything else on the first three verses, by the way? I know I'm glossing over those fairly quickly. So now that the psalmist has called us to praise and to rejoice and to enjoy, now we're finally going to get into history. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I don't know if anybody actually has any idea what I'm referring to. I can think of no reason. Oh, what's the rest of the poem? I can think of no reason the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. And if you're totally lost, watch V for Vendetta. It'll make sense. But the point is, you need to remember your history. By the way, I shouldn't do that. Just leave it lying. The poem I just recited is from Guy Fawkes trying to blow up Parliament because they wouldn't give people freedom of religion. It's a long story. He shouldn't have tried to blow them up. But the point is, it's important to remember that we need religious freedom and freedom of ideas and stuff like that. The bigger idea I'm going for is remember your history. It's very important. It's part of who we are. So having said that, let's see if you can see that idea in verses 4-8, please.
O offspring of Abraham, his servant, children of Jacob, chosen ones. He is the Lord our God, his judgments are in all the earth. He remembers the word that he commanded.
Thank you. So again, the big idea here I'd offer is the psalmist is calling us to remember what God has done. And if you're an Israelite, so back to the triptych, original audience, the main work you're going to remember is God rescuing his people out of slavery in Egypt. That's like the redemptive event for them. Of course, for us, the redemptive event is Jesus' death and resurrection. So remember everything God has done, but that's kind of the pinpoint that you remember. And I'm just going to gloss over this for now. But verse 9, remember that. The covenant which he made with Abraham and his... Excuse me, verse... you're right, my apologies. Verse 8... Remember that he has remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations. That covenant idea is a big deal. And if you pay attention whenever I get up here and pontificate, I hope you get the idea that covenant is a big deal to me. Not that that makes it important, but I think covenant is a really important theme in the Bible. So just remember that. I'll try to come back to it later. So again, rejoice before the Lord. How does he call us to rejoice? By remembering the wondrous things God has done. And now we're going to look at three sections that we're going to read through fairly quickly. And as we read it, remember, we're going for emotion. The psalmist is trying to get us to feel something as he describes and recounts Israel's history. But I'm going to bring in PF caps. Apparently today is a total bring in all Zach's old stuff here. But the P in PF caps is pattern. So if you care about all of them, it's pattern, flow, context, absent details, present details, surprises. PF caps, PF flyers, guaranteed to make a kid run faster and jump higher. PF caps, almost guaranteed to make you a better reader. I don't want to make a guarantee and then it doesn't work. But today in particular, if you would look for the pattern that's going to show up across all three of these stories, if you will. I might have seen a hand. I'm sorry. Did I cut somebody off? Okay. Today apparently is not the best example of teaching. I'm not necessarily making great concept connections here. All right, let's hear about the patriarch. So Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and hear how the psalmist describes them. And again, I know it's hard. You can't get a pattern the first time through, but kind of start looking for a pattern, if you will, in how the psalmist is describing them. So would somebody please read verses 9 through 15?
They were few in number, of little account, and sojourners in a foreign land. One kingdom to another people, he allowed no one to oppress them. He rebuked on their account, saying, "Touch not my anointed, my prophets."
Thank you. Okay, I'm throwing out a net or a hook with no bait on it here. And I'm not going to give you a lot of time, but if you see something, it might be worth sharing. Anybody see anything particularly salient or noteworthy or even odd about that recounting of the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob time period? A theme that the psalmist seems to be bringing out.
I like how he really quickly like summarizes and flows them all together like it was one covenant.
Hear, hear. Good point. Not what I was fishing for, but good point. Well said. Verse 12, they were only few in number, very few, and strangers in it, and they wandered from nation to nation. Now, this doesn't exactly sound like heroic covenant people, right? You know, this is like Outlander or something. That's a really old reference if anybody even gets that. But anybody see right after that? How they are also described, or what also is given to them, maybe? I'm not saying it right.
No one oppresses
them. He allows no one to oppress them, and he rebukes kings for their saying, "Do not touch my anointed ones. Don't mess with my prophets." These few wandering vagabonds that I have made my covenant promise with, by the way, here comes my pattern. I'll just show you my card. Dry places. That is not the life that I'd want my kid to have, you know, wandering around, doesn't have his own home, you know, very few and small. That's a dry place. But there's a river there. And the river in this case is no one may oppress them. I rebuke kings for the sake of my people. Nobody touch them. That's amazing. All right. Anything else from the Abraham, Isaac, Jacob story? So let's go to the next section, and now we're going to go to a recounting of the story of Joseph, verses 16 through 22. And again, look for pattern, and I've already given you what I think the pattern is, so see if you think it's actually there, or if I'm making it up, be a good respectful skeptic, or maybe you see something else entirely. So how does the psalmist tell the story of Joseph now, and why does he tell it that way? So if somebody would, read verses 16 through 22.
And some of the famine on the land broke all the supply of the bread. He had sent a man ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. His feet were hurt with fetters, his neck was put in a collar of iron. Until he had said, "Come to pass," the word of the Lord tested him. The king sent and released him. The ruler of the people set him free. He made the Lord his house and the ruler of all his possessions, to bind his princes at his pleasure and to teach his elders.
Thank you. Anybody see any patterns or observations noteworthy there?
Up until he told what the Lord was going to bring forth, he was treated really poorly. After that, he was treated.
Hear, hear. So again, the idea I'm at least looking for, or at least that I think is there, is this dry river flowing through it. I mean, just if you let the psalm carry you, you know, like, I don't know, a stream or something like that, like the emotional flow is weird. Verse 16, he called for a famine upon the land. Ooh, that's not good. By the way, note that this is God doing this stuff. He is sovereignly ordaining this stuff. He is orchestrating all this. It's not just happening. This is what he's doing. Anyway, he calls for a famine. That's not good. He sent a man before them. Oh, that's good. Joseph, who was sold as a slave. That's not good. They forced his feet into shackles. He's put in irons until the time that his word came to pass. You know, until the Lord worked all this out. And I mean, you've read the rest of it, so you can see he gets released. He is the ruler of peoples. He's ruler over all his possessions. He can imprison high officials at will and teach elders wisdom. You know, so there's kind of that same echo that we saw where God is rebuking kings, and here Joseph is in charge of elders and officials and can imprison them. So again, and Reagan got it, what I was after. The idea is the history of Israel is a history of dry places, famine, slavery, mistreatment, discipline. Not sure that I'm missing the connection on that concept there. Okay. But no, you did great. But there's rivers there. There's samurai castles. I'm going to try to make connections here. And there's beautiful buildings and great things. But there's rivers here. You know, the Lord is orchestrating all this. Joseph is learning wisdom. He's teaching elders. He's imprisoning officials. Like, the Lord is at work. And let me make two applications here before we go on. First application, because I keep forgetting to do this, what the kids are learning. Since Cameron's left us now, I've got an inside. He tells me what the kids' lesson is each week, because I want you guys to know, one, that's one more connection point, right? Concepts and connections, makes them stick. And two, then you can talk to your kids, because, you know, you ask your kid, what'd you learn in Sunday school today? Nothing, or whatever, I don't know, whatever they say. But the lesson today for the kids is Acts 18, when Paul and Aquila and Priscilla work together making tents. And the main idea is, at least if your teachers teach it according to the official lesson, the main idea is God uses our talents. And so look at the way he is using Joseph's talents. So whatever we are learning in our dry places, the Lord is somehow going to use that to bless people. And that's what your kids are learning. So there, you can make a connection to, you really want to throw your kids off. So, did you learn about Aquila and Priscilla? And watch your kids be like, no, because the teacher just made something else entirely up along the way. But anyway, but the other thing is, I don't know, just, and you know, when you know people, there's always somebody crying and there's always somebody laughing, right? Like, there's always somebody rejoicing and there's always somebody weeping. But as I was reading through the prayer requests, because I don't know if I've told you guys, I think I told you this, but almost every time before I start working on the lesson, I read Victoria's prayer request email, so that your worlds are in my head as I'm, you know, making this lesson. And for whatever reason, just knowing about the stuff going on in your lives today, especially sickness, like, there are a number of you guys who are dealing with some sicknesses that nobody's got any answers for, and it's flaring up and stuff like that. And then, you know, even aside from that, everybody's got troubles and difficulties and hard relationships and stuff like that. So my point is to say, like, I want to own, yep, God has put us in some dry places. He has. Let's just shoot straight. And I don't know what he's up to. But I do know from history, he always provides rivers and he is up to something. No drop of blood, no drop of sweat, no tear is ever wasted in God's kingdom. Jesus' blood is too precious to let our suffering go in vain. So I'm trying to say that as an offering of hope and encouragement and steadfastness and looking to the cross, because, man, it's hard when you've been had the same pain for 7 days in a row and can't get rid of it, or you've tried to heal this relationship for the fifth time this month and you're just getting nothing but hate, or, you know, whatever your dry place is. But I want you to know, like, really, based on the authority of the Bible, if you belong to Jesus, there is a river in that dry place. Even if you're not there yet, somehow there is a river in that dry place. All right, anything else before we get to the Exodus? All right, big chunk. But let's look at how the psalmist retells the story of the Exodus now and see if this pattern that I'm trying to put forward, this dry place, river, all orchestrated by God, still shows up. So if somebody would read verses 23 through 41, please.
Then Israel entered Egypt. Jacob resided as a foreigner in the land. The Lord made his people very fruitful. He made them too numerous for their foes, whose hearts he turned to hate his people, conspire against his servants. He sent Moses, his servant, and Aaron, whom he had chosen. They performed his signs among them, his wonders in the land of men. He sent darkness and made the land dark, for had they not rebelled against his words, he turned their water into blood, causing their fish to die. Their land teemed with frogs, which sent up into the bedrooms of their rulers. He spoke, and there came swarms of flies and gnats throughout their country. He turned their rain into hail with lightning throughout their land. He struck down their vines and fig trees and shattered the trees of their country. He spoke, and the locusts came, grasshoppers without number. They ate up every green thing in their land, ate up the produce of their soil. Then he struck down the firstborn of their land, the first fruits of all of their manhood. He brought up Israel, laden with silver and gold, and from among their tribes no one faltered. Egypt was glad when they left, because dread of Israel had fallen on them. He spread out a cloud as a covering and a fire to give light at night. They asked, and he brought them quail. He fed them well with the bread of heaven. He opened the rock, and water gushed out. It flowed like river.
Hear, hear. Thank you kindly. Long section. Bravo. So again, I'm hoping, and excuse me, for real, correct me if you see otherwise. Again, there's this theme of dry place and river. Like they come down, they're very numerous, yahoo, but they get enslaved and oppressed. And even, did you catch that, by the way? I know I didn't even say what that is, but verse 25, that'll throw you if you don't have a good belief in God's almighty sovereignty, right? He turned their heart to hate his people, to deal cunningly with his servants. I'm sorry, what? Like really, like, I don't get me wrong. If I were editing the Bible, which I'm very glad I didn't, that wouldn't make the final cut. Like, that's going to make some people trip up. We don't need to put that in there. But it's there, right? Like, God is orchestrating even the difficult people in our lives as dry places to lead us to rivers. So anyway, so lots of dry rivers, you know, water into blood, the plagues, terrible stuff. And yet they come out, the Israelites come out with silver and gold. I love that image in the end of verse 37. Among his tribes, there was not one who stumbled. You know, all these people walk out and nobody so much as trips. Like, this is a mighty God. Anyway, so you get the idea. Anything else from those or from that section that was noteworthy to you? All right, so let's wrap it up. And as always, I am not at all offended if you either need to or want to take off. You guys are kind to listen to this, and I hope it's helpful. So now we're going to close it out with the outro. And actually, I'm going to make points of application with each of these. So here's kind of the psalmist ending the psalm with this grand and glorious climax, calling us to praise the Lord. But let me let somebody read it, and then I'll try to throw something in there, and we'll call it a day. If somebody read verses 42 through 45.
For he remembered his people. He brought his people out. He gave them the lands of the nations, but other people. All this happens so that they might keep the statutes and obey him.
Thank you kindly. So to close it out, I mean, you can see what the psalmist says. And again, if you get the chance, go back and reread the psalm. One of my favorite stories about Flannery O'Connor, a great story writer, somebody once asked her to give a summary of her story. And she said, I cannot give you a summary, because if I give you a summary, you will miss what I put in my story. Like, every word I put in my story is there for a reason. So I say that because even though I'm summarizing what I think the psalm is about, you can't really get everything the psalm is about without actually reading the psalm. So take this back and put it in the psalm and see if it fits. Anyway, so four kind of passing questions as we go out. So verse 42, he remembered his holy word with his servant Abraham. What's the foundation of our relationship? It's the covenant that was secured by Jesus. So I've said this before, just for what it's worth, remember it. You know, we don't have to bargain with God. Oh God, I'll do this if you just get me out of this. Or, oh God, I know I've screwed up again, and we are 100% rooted in Jesus if we trust Jesus, and therefore we are remembered by God. Best day, worst day, always rooted in God because of his covenant personality and because of what Jesus has done to secure that covenant. 43, he leads out his people with joy. What's the primary emotion that marks our lives? It should be joy. Now, don't get me wrong, life's plenty hard, lots of dry places. But like, I don't know, like I was thinking about this. There's some people that like in their inside out emotions, joy is not the one driving the ship. You know what I mean? Like from Disney Inside Out, like there's some people in my world that they just like to be angry. Like, I don't get it. Like they're angry all the time. Or there's other people that like anxiety is their thing. Like they're nervous all the time. They're like a deer in the wild or something like that. But for the Christian, it really should be joy at the helm. Like the movie got that part right. That not saying the other emotions aren't there, but the primary thing is joy. Verse 44, he gave them the lands of the nations so that they might take possession of the fruit of the people's labor. What has God won for us that we haven't claimed yet? Which I know sounds weird. I'm not talking about cars and money, but like God has called us into a good relationship. I mean, when Hallie and I fight, which is always my fault, never happens anyway, right? But when Hallie and I fight, like, or whenever I get into a disgruntlement with Brent or I treat him bad, like, what am I going to do? Am I going to cling to my pride and be like, well, I'm the man, so I'm right? Or am I going to swallow it, which is a very jagged little pill to swallow, Alanis Morissette reference, but jagged little pill to swallow. Am I going to swallow it? Because on the other side of that forgiveness is a great relationship. And that's mine to claim, to walk into if I will just do what God tells me to do. And there's other things, right? Your confidence. Oh, I'm so nervous. You know, you can live in that fear, or you can be like, you know what? God is my Lord. And he walks before me and brings rivers in dry places. So let's do this. So lands for you to claim, if you will. And then finally, simple, stupid, verse 45, that they might keep his statutes. You know, the old hymn, right? Trust and obey. For there's no other way to be happy in Jesus than to trust and obey. Just do what God says. Not because you think that's how you get into heaven, but because you trust him to know what's best for you. So, you know, you can fudge the numbers, math, or you can tell the truth. Good math. I should just quit there while I'm ahead because it's not going to get any better. And I'm way over time anyway. So that's what I got. Big idea. There will be dry places, but there will also be rivers because God has orchestrated that in Israel's history, and he orchestrates it in our history because of who Jesus is. Whew, that was a lot. Any closing comments or anything like that? Let's pray. Holy Spirit, please make this real. Prayer is a good way to close, not just because it's easy and clear, but because we're asking you to take this lesson and take whatever was good in it and make it real in our lives. Save our kids. Help us to love one another well. Help us to love you above all else. In the name of Jesus, Messiah, we pray. Amen.